And we continue. With me on the wrong track. No, I'm down here instead of up there.
Why? Does that matter?
No.
We're wasting valuable airtime now.
Yeah, sorry. Karen.
Okay. Right.
Amy's Choice. Amy's Choice. Always summing up on the previous episode. I think
we finished with that.
Yeah, right. Yes. Right. Amy's Choice it is then.
Okay. Nice setup. Disturbing scenario. Don't quite know what's going on. Hopping around. Quite nice sparky dialogue I've got written here.
Mm-hmm.
Nice sense of mystery, quite creepy, sort of sense of dislocation, jumping around.
And the TARDIS exploding, which had a precursor to, maybe that was just a clue to the whole thing.
A lot of handheld camera work, which is itself is usually sort of, yeah.
And Rory shines, Rory shines in this episode. And that death scene at the end, I know we're moving on a bit, but that was really quite, you know, put a lump to my throat.
Yes.
When he sort of turns into dust, and that was such a great scene, and the Doctor doesn't know how to handle it and how to comfort Amy. But moving backwards to the beginning, again, the mouths, the aliens, have something about mouths in this series. And brilliant, the Dream Lord, I thought was an excellent character and well, very well played by that little chap. I've forgotten the name of Toby somebody or other, wasn't it? Toby,
yes. I don't know. Awesome.
Somebody or other. But I must say, we were doing the podcast by the time we watched this or reviewed this original episode, and I didn't listen to what Alicia said about it, so I just did my spiel, and I said...
Do you listen to anything that Alicia says?
I do, no. I usually say my piece, and I say, well, I have to admit, and on this occasion I said I didn't really like it the first time I watched it. And she said, oh, I hated it. But when I watched it a second time, I absolutely loved it. It's really weird. I know that people are saying, you know, you shouldn't have to watch an episode a second time to appreciate it. I'm not too sure that's true, because people watch films over and over again. But with this one, I didn't like it first time. I love it. I can now watch it over and over again and really, really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But is this one you were able to sit through?
I can't remember, actually. I've got an idea I did get distracted on this one again. By distracted, I mean going and doing the washing up or something.
Oh, right.
Because I'm just not intrigued enough or something, I don't know. But again, going back and watching it again, I did like it.
Mm.
Again, talking about the Dream Lord, I mean, he's very enigmatic.
Yes.
There was a hint of, you know, the only person he could possibly be would be the Master, which he isn't at all.
I thought when he said there's only one person in the universe that hates me as much as you do, it's going to be him. I thought it was Valiard.
Oh, the Valiard. Oh.
Yes. And in a way, it is.
In some ways, he is.
Yeah. But it's not actually a person, it's just a... Because you know, at the end where you look.
Well,
yeah,
I did find the resolution. I did find the explanation for these polleny things, whatever it was, stuck in the time.
Yeah, very throwaway, wasn't it? It flew through the pollen away.
Okay, that's what it's all been about, has it? I thought there could have been something a bit more sinister in a way.
A bit more
that.
Material than just some sort of thing. But in the end, it was. It's still a very, very good, very, very good episode and very sort of original. You know, they haven't really done a lot. I suppose the other one that was most similar to it previous episode was the Edge of Darkness. So the one where they were stuck in the TARDIS and, you know, and Susan was going around with a knife.
Edge of Destruction.
Darkness. What's Edge of Darkness?
Edge of Darkness is, it's an old TV series with Bob Peck, and it's recently made
a
movie
out.
With Mel Gibson or somebody. One of those,
Edge of Destruction, that's the one, you twonk. I'm going to sound a right idiot now, aren't I?
Never mind. Nice book cover.
that one?
I can't imagine.
as most of the Doctor Who book covers are at some point in the past.
Not all of them.
Oh, go on.
He loves a redhead, does our Doctor, yes. Oh, there we are. I love a redhead.
I like the actual village scenes and some of the when it was really dreamy, that it was lit in a certain way and it was a lot of very orange. And there was again at the time when I watched the episode and I watched the Confidential was so much better than the episode which at that time. And then I watched the episode again and I thought, oh, that's just really good.
It was Arthur's show, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Oh yes, of course. It was a proper introduction to Rory as a character.
In his dream job. Note the word dream job as a doctor rather than
and
a nurse.
And he was more or less the presenter of the Confidential. Mm. And Karen Gillan looked really great in that one.
Oh, behave.
But yeah, no. On the whole, I really enjoyed.
Is it worth noting that we see the policeman getting it, but not the kids?
Is it?
Yeah, I don't know. Is it worth noting?
You mean getting it?
Getting zapped by the.
Was he a policeman?
Did I say policeman? I meant to say postman.
I was going to say.
Did I say policeman? I don't know.
Do you remember the bit where the doctor's driving the VW van, and he's getting the kids and that, the parents and that, to jump in the van. And there's a bloke with a great big white beard. I said, to Alicia, do you think that's Father Christmas?
Not Uncle Albert.
Yeah, Uncle Albert.
In the water. Oh, God, okay. And it's all about Amy again. It's all about
all about Amy.
Yeah, I didn't like, that's right. Mm-hmm.
But that's quite funny, doing that song, It's All About You, of course, is a song which is titled music to a certain film by a certain Mr. Curtis.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not interested by that. But no. Is that not the next episode? No, we're on to
the I've never seen any of Richard Curtis's work.
Have you not? We have now.
I have now.
Right, so Amy's Choice is on the whole very good. But did you enjoy it first time? No, because you got
distracted. Not really, no.
No, same as me then. So,
No, I like the sort of psychological aspect of it, of the Dream Lord being the Doctor's inner psyche or something.
Yeah.
Turning against him.
And also, it's a very rare thing. Lots of the episode were based inside the TARDIS, and I used to love inside TARDIS episodes, a la Logopolis, Castrovalva,
Terminus. Gotcha there.
But Terminus is very
80s.
Indicative of the next story we're about to talk of with Hungry Earth, because
it is.
Well, yes, the Earth in the Terminus.
The other thing is a Frontios.
Oh, yeah. Duh.
Oh, you do that every time.
Well, it's very late at night. That's the second time I've done it in the last 5 minutes.
Well, you've got the right doctor anyway. The Hungry Earth. Yeah, okay, let's talk about that then, shall we? Well, actually, I've got the Hungry Earth brackets, Frontios. Because Frontios buries its own dead or something, isn't it? And there are people getting...
So you do mention Frontios in your notes.
I've got the Hungry Earth, 8, the Hungry Earth, C. Chibnall. I can't stand him.
Sorry, Christopher, if you were listening.
Well, he wrote, the worst ever Torchwood episode, and I hate Torchwood anyway.
Oh, I love Torchwood. I love Torchwood, Chris.
It's crap. especially when you write it, anyway.
Ooh!
Oh, sorry, miss. Okay, so we're in 2020. That's the year, apparently.
Yeah.
And, boy, don't things look cheap. why don't they? I mean...
It's only 10 years into the future.
I know, really annoyed me about just the look of this episode at the beginning. You've got this big high-tech setup in some mouldy old shed. You know, and you think, what? there'd be hundreds of people. It wouldn't be like 4 people milling around.
It's Wales!
I know, but, I mean, God... There'd be hundreds of people. It wouldn't be like one guy working there overnight.
They were trying to make it look like how you would imagine the old Welsh coal mines to look. Yeah, slightly more high-tech.
I don't know. It's just I'm griping, I know. But it's just silly little things like that. And you think, it looks like they've spent 10p on this.
They probably have.
They probably had to, yeah.
But another thing about that was quite disappointing is the scene where Amy and Rory see themselves on the hill. And, of course, later on it's just Amy.
Yes.
But that's never... They never come back to that. What was the whole point? It's exactly the same as is it Day of the Daleks when they see Doctor and Joe see themselves in that sort of timey wimey thing?
Yeah,
and they never come back to it.
Oh, they do in the book.
They do in the book. Well, that's helpful.
And then they would have done on TV if they got around to it.
Oh, would they?
I think they had to cut it because of studio time or something.
Oh, I'd love to know what that was all about. You can tell me that later. I'll explain later, as the Doctor would say.
okay, so we've got the mystery of the blue grass and all that sort of stuff. So, the setup
that's never explained, though, is it?
The storyline, I don't think it was explained adequately, no.
No.
There's plenty of mystery and intrigue going on, and what is going on here, but I don't know. Again, there was just something missing. I felt
there were so many daft things about it. Mm. I enjoyed it again. I did enjoy it. But like you said, when we were off air, I love these terms.
In the what?
When we were off air, that's a sort of.
When we were off air. Oh, I see. Yeah. Yes.
And when you said about when they have that, they are like having this conference on behalf of the human race. And you can have the deserts, we'll have the thing. And there'd still be a prime minister somewhere in the country somewhere, and they're sort of ranking the prime minister by having this conversation. That was a bit silly.
Yeah.
There was a few silly things about it. Like the tongue CGI, but the tongue come out.
Oh, God.
That was great. But it was some really good things, like the performance of the little boy, the autistic. It wasn't autistic. It was
He was
dyslexic.
Dyslexic. Yes.
Brilliant performance by him. The children have done really well in this series.
They have.
The actual sort of atmosphere around that scene when they were sort of locked in that church, that was really good. Because
the main thing for me about this episode was I hadn't previously taken... although I have every episode of Doctor Who magazine going right back to the 12p issue 1 from October 1979.
Yes, as I said before, you are a professor.
Yeah, but I haven't read any Doctor Who magazines for about 6 years now or
you
more.
Still get them.
I get it every month, I just don't read it. I don't have time, my God. I don't have time. And... I think time. Oh God, I've got all my coins.
Yes, if you can guess who Alex Fisher is impersonating, please write an email.
I start doing the James Mason in a minute. Oh, I've got a James Mason kick at the moment. And, I watched a film of his the other day. Gertrude the Duck. Anyway,
We are slightly diversifying.
I didn't know the Silurians were coming back until like 2 weeks beforehand.
Oh, you didn't know.
And I was flicking through Doctor Who magazine, and I thought, oh, what's this wizardy thing then? With the green hips and all the rest of it. Mm. And that's my stomach. Could you hear that, listener?
You could have said it was a cat or something.
I'm not a cat.
Well, listeners don't know. We broadcast from a corridor, for goodness sake.
Yes.
Or sometimes a veranda.
Sometimes a veranda. Mm. We're not on the veranda tonight.
No. As you can, well, good side, creaky chairs. Yeah, we can't hear any barbecues going or seagulls in the background.
So I didn't know the Silurians were coming back. So I saw this lizardy thing in this magazine. I thought, oh, what's this? It's a Silurian. What? And also I've seen some, you know, behind the scenes original concept designs for New Look Silurians where they've got the third eye.
And the current one, they had a third eye, did they?
Yeah. And it's the old budget again, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let's just give them almost human faces and forget about all that. And I thought, well, at one point I thought, okay, are they implying, because of these silvery mask things...
That the original ones had silvery...
The Silurian, the Pertwee Silurians and the Davison Silurians were wearing masks as well. Hence the third eye being our artificial thing, a heat weapon and whatever it is, and the later ones flashing in time with their speech for some reason. Because it's not their real faces, and that's why you can see someone's eyelashes flashing away in Warriors of the Deep. Yes, sorry. Sad fan here.
No, I heard that there was just another branch of a sort of intelligent lizard species, as was the Sea Devils, a branch of that sort of
sign. Which does work on that level, but initially I thought, oh, is that what they're sort of implying here? But obviously they're not. So, I don't know, what else have we got written down here, if anything? Why do the Silurians sound so Scottish? That was an odd thing.
Well, the thing that annoyed me after somebody explained it to me was how sinister the Doctor was when he was just about to dissect Amy at the end of one episode, and then suddenly how lovely and friendly he was in the next episode. That didn't make, in hindsight, made no sense whatsoever. But I don't want to sound like Darth Sceptical, but that's what he would say, and he'd probably be right on that score. But then, what does make sense in a series like Doctor Who? It's just a bit of fantasy entertainment at the end of the day. But some things do annoy you, and that is a bit annoying, must admit. But on the whole, I did enjoy it. I did enjoy it. I think that could really have been a one-parter for me. I think. Didn't think it needed to be a two-parter.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
I mean,
Cold Blood is more of the same, really. Intriguing voiceover at the beginning.
Yeah.
With good old Stephen Moore.
Yeah.
Marvin.
He was good.
Hurrah for Marvin.
But then, why the voiceover? I suppose because Moffat wants to come back to that.
Seeing someone else's point of view, I suppose.
They're bound to, aren't they? I think that's one thing we're bound to have in the next series is 500 years later, or however long the Doctor said, they have to wait. I'm pretty sure, although then there'll be an issue with the crack again, wouldn't they? Well, hang on, if the crack's not there, why is this, that and the other? But which again, the crack thing. Why was, and is it because he's a Time Lord? He's able to reach inside a crack and not be, erased from existence. He's able to pick out a bit of the TARDIS and stuff like that. So, I said that. I thought that at the time I saw that episode, apart from when I was choking on my tears and knowing that Rory died again.
I was just checking on my tea.
But that scene in the TARDIS, though, when he's trying to get Amy to remember him. That's a really, really good scene, that. Mm-hmm. Well played by... When she's got to do those emotional scenes, she's exceptionally good, isn't she?
Oh, she is.
Yeah, it's just sometimes when she's just being Amy that she's a bit sort of one-dimensional, I suppose. know, when she's being, oh, doctor. Sure, but, you know.
If you can guess who Adam's doing, it's Andrew.
I'd rather give the game away. Yes. I think I was spot on, actually.
I can't make sense of anything else I've written here.
Well, I can't make sense of...
toxic fumigation, yes.
Yeah, there you go. That was a bit convenient, wasn't it?
Years.
As if a race would set up a system that would sort of exterminate themselves in the event of something or other, you know. That doesn't make sense to me.
No.
It's a very convenient thing, that, but there you go. We'll forgive it, because it's it got a solution to the episode, didn't it, at the end of the day. But I think we better move on from that. I mean, again, it's not my favourite story of the series, but I'd enjoy it. So far, I'd say that my favourite one of the series up to that point would have been the angel story.
Thing, yes.
So then, after that one,
after that point, okay,
we're suddenly arriving at what are we up to now?
We're up to episode 10,
which is
Vincent and the Doctor.
Yes.
Which again, I walked out of.
Yeah, you walked out. When I watched, this is one of those ones when I watched it the first time, I absolutely loved it all the way through. And a lot of people, you know, you said it's off air again, off air. I'm using these terms so well. You said about Athlete, the song and that. What was it called again?
Chances.
Chances, yeah.
From the album Tourist.
People have really griped about that being on there. But there's been other instances in Doctor Who history where they've played actual tracks for certain instances. I can't remember off the top of my head. Well, it's really frustrating. Maybe in a later episode I will do. But I know they have used music. Not in that context, but they have used it in previous episode proper, you know, contemporary music. But it worked so well in that scene.
It really did match that
scene brilliantly. And all in all, I mean, I was totally engrossed in that episode. The performance, it was so convincing, and obviously the picture of Vincent van Gogh when they put it up to his face.
Yeah.
They must have painted that especially. You know, it just worked so well. And I like timey-wimey, I like the backwards and forwards travelling, you know, where the TARDIS, where they bring him back to show his paintings and show
that. Well, I thought that was very, very interesting, because that is so totally out of character for the Doctor to do that.
But you knew that he was
not
that I think
it's a precedent or anything like that.
No.
Let's go and show Napoleon what really happens or something. But I just thought, out of character in a way, but it worked within the context of the story.
Yes.
So I did like that when I watched it again.
But obviously they had an invisible low-budget monster in it. But that didn't matter again, because... Again, use a bit of imagination. It was so well played as well, the scenes. And when the monster died...
I actually walked out. The bit where I thought, oh, for God's sake, I went was in the garden when it first appears.
Yes.
In the garden.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, what's this? And I just, I don't know.
But of course, it looks a bit
or
like
I was toing and froing
fat
in that...
turkey.
I was toing and froing between that scene and the bit where the Doctor goes back to the TARDIS and gets that thing with the big wing mirror thing.
Yes.
And beyond that point, I just thought, I can't be bothered with this. So.
But, yeah, I mean, if you can get past that bit, obviously,
what was I thinking?
Treated.
Having watched it properly, what was I thinking?
Because remember the
what
bit
was
where
the
they're
problem?
Lying down and he's describing to Amy the thing, and they do the little swirly bits with the
stars. Oh, that was beautiful, yes. That was some very nice touches in the whole
thing. Just, I think, and it's very clever, because obviously they're doing an episode about an artist, obviously one of the favourite artists of all time. And in itself, it is a work of art, which I just love that sort of element that they've turned, and especially the scenes when they were so sort of Van Gogh-y, you know.
Yes.
It's brilliant, and the lighting and everything.
Well, his bedroom was specifically designed to look like the painting.
I know, but
it was
so well done.
Yeah,
and
it was
probably one of the most believable historic episodes, even though it shouldn't be, because it's timey-wimey, and the Doctor and Amy are there, and there's a city invisible monster, but... You know, it was just so, believable in its own context, and it's just lovely. And in also the thing I liked about it was a standalone Doctor Who episode in that sort of context. There was no story arc involved in it until he comes back in the in episode 13. But I don't include that, because it wasn't actually part of that particular story. Just wonderful. It was, for me, including episode 12 and 13, my favourite episode in the series.
And I thought it was intriguing or interesting that, given that the whole episode was really about vision and perception and seeing things, that the creature itself is blind.
Yeah.
So that was quite nice.
But it was also very moving when the creature died, because he didn't, and Vincent's reaction to the creature's death, and that was just lovely. But some people have said, well, that creature then would be lying in that church and rotting away and for many years to come, blah, 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 for goodness sake. But yeah, it was very sad, wasn't it? But brilliant. All right. I love it. Anyway, all right, so.
And it had Bill Nye in it. Yes. Well, he always like a bit of Bill Nye. Yes.
But, and he didn't get a credit, did he, for some reason?
Did he not?
No, he didn't have his name in the credit at all.
Oh, was he doing a Whoopi Goldberg, was he?
What did Whoopi Goldberg? I don't remember her being a doctor.
No, she didn't get a credit on Generations.
Oh, did she not?
No.
Oh, maybe that's why then.
Yeah. He's too big.
It's a bit strange because she actually regularly appeared in Star Trek Next Generation.
Well,
did she get a credit for that?
Yeah, I think so, but not in the movie.
Okay, weird. Maybe they just forgot. So, yeah, Vincent the Doctor, absolutely magnificent, which took us then into the Lodger, was it?
The Lodger,
yes. Now, I love the Lodger because I'm a football fan, and I actually personally like James Corden. Now, before I move on, I've said this in a previous episode of this show, on the other podcast, they were sort of saying, oh, James Corden is some sort of comedian, actor, bloke that appeared in Gavin and Stacey, blah, blah, blah. But they never, apart from me, have mentioned the fact he co-wrote one of the most successful comedic series of this era, really. And
which is what?
Gavin and Stacey. I mean,
he co-wrote it?
He co-wrote it, and he doesn't get credit for that in all the other shows. So I'm giving him credit.
Well, perhaps people don't know, like me.
He's a bit more talented as a writer, as a person, really, if you can create a good bit of...
Well, I've never seen a whole episode of Gavin and Stacey, although I knew who James Corden was.
Yeah.
And he gives a very, very sensitive performance in something called Cruise of the Gods. And if you've never seen it, go and watch it or get it.
Oh, right. What's it called?
Cruise of the Gods. I'll lend you the DVD.
Oh, thank you.
Steve Coogan.
Is it a comedy?
It's the Welsh guy with the ripple skin. Who's in Gavin and Stacey?
Oh, I know you too. Rob Brydon.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's in it as well.
I expect he'll be in Doctor Who soon.
Probably. Because he's Welsh,
So we're talking about Doctor. I'm going to slightly diverse for a few moments, but about all the British actors. At some point, well-known British actors and actors at some point in their time have appeared in Doctor Who.
Yes.
Celia Emery has never appeared in Doctor Who, as far as I know.
Come on, Celia.
What's going on?
Have a word with your agent, dear.
Yes. Anyway. That's what I'm going to say about James Corden. He's far more talented than people have given him credit for, and in this particular episode, he was great. And I just love it. It's just a bit of comedy fun, and I think it's nice to have the odd comedy episode, a comedy Doctor Who story, because one of my favourite stories of Doctor Who of all time is a comedy, which is City of Death.
Right.
It's magnificent. Yes. I know it's not with Douglas Adams, but it's just magnificent. And this is good. I enjoyed it. So there's a couple of annoying moments where, the Doctor gets blown out of the TARDIS and Amy's suddenly able to fly it and stuff like that. Why? And this thing in his ear, he's suddenly able to communicate with her, and that doesn't make sense either to me. And then the TARDIS thing. Oh, somebody's building a TARDIS. And then they don't talk about it ever again.
Yeah.
And it's a bit sentimental where you can get rid of everything by just falling in love and giving yourself a kiss or giving each other a kiss. Silly, but again, because it's just a bit of fun. Yeah.
Don't look at me like that.
Were you referring to me then?
Yes, I was.
But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it.
No, I thought it was nicely written. I thought it was nicely played. As you said, there are a few sort of bits that don't make sense. Mm. Like, why is the hall so wide? architecturally.
It's probably part to do the
a house of that and upstairs would never...
Perception filter.
Oh, could be. Yeah.
Everything can explain everything away with a perception filter.
Ah, apparently. Yes, I must get myself one.
I'm surprised that they don't change the comedian circuit into a perception filter, because it's the in word.
It really is a cupboard inside. Yeah. what I thought was interesting, sort of looking at it on a slightly higher level, dare I say, apart from football and rom-com or whatever, was the Doctor is really seen through human eyes, as it were, through a human character, as a figure to be envious of. Or jealous about.
Yeah.
Which, is it Craig, is his character name? He does. You're better than me, you're better at this than me. And he's out there kicking the ball around, everyone's, doctor, and all this, and suddenly this great pudding, is suddenly not the top man anymore. Mm. And this guy goes into work and, oh my God! And I don't know if rude Mr. Lang on the phone, rude Mr. Lang?
Mm-hmm.
Really hold, please. Oh,
right, sorry. I've only seen the
There's something about rude Mr. Lang and Paul Lang, who's the editor of... the designer of the Adventures comic.
Right.
His current... username. right. on one of the forums is Rude Mr. Lang. Now, whether he's known in fans,
yeah, he probably is though.
As Rude Mr. Lang,
he probably finally is
because he's probably quite rude in the same way that I am. if you know what I mean. Anyway, little in joke again.
But did you know that the story is based on the car, before you watched it?
No, because I don't watch. I don't read the magazine. No, I do have dim memories of turning the pages of the magazine and seeing the 10th Doctor in a football kit and thinking, what's that all about? Mm. So I wasn't previously aware of it, no. Hmm. But, I think it achieved what it set out to do, which is being an entertaining 45 minutes of British television thing.
Yes, and it was. And it was a good pre-sort of little light relief before the series finale. Mm-hmm. Again, it was a bit of a standalone episode again. Which I like. I'd like more standalone episodes. I can appreciate that they have to have this story arc thing. They've done it now, and they keep on having to do it. But I wish they'd have less emphasis on it to a certain degree, and have more sort of do a story arc episode, a standalone episode. You know, just sort of stagger it a little bit, so we have more standalone episodes or stories, you know, within the story, or just make the stories a little bit just more subtly story arc orientated, so they can stand on their own as episodes as well.
Yeah. You know?
So that's why I'd probably like Vincent the Doctor and the Lodger so much, because they are, and to a certain degree, 11th Hour, because 11th Hour is the first of the story arc. It doesn't really matter about the rest of it, because you could watch it and think, not really realise that this crack has something to do with later episodes. You can much watch it. So, no, it's a sort of like a christening of a new Doctor story, which of course it is, and it's really, really good. So, yes, I do like the Lodger. I think I've only watched it once, so. That's about it.
I've watched an episode of Doctor Who more than you have, my God.
And did you manage to sit through the whole thing? It's unthinkable.
Well, I watched it all the way through first time round, and I watched it all of obviously.
Yes,
watched
obviously
it.
It's
I just forgot to make any notes, that's why I'm not saying
it. It qualifies as a casual viewer would consider it to be a. And apparently, audience appreciation figures were 87%, which is supposed to be quite high. Of course, the audience appreciation figures for the 20 Beg About Doctor Who podcast are 100%, but nobody ever talks about that.
This one.
So, well, now can we
get rid of that idiot? We don't hear him anymore.
To
episode 12.
The Pandorica Open. Long last. Again, I've only seen this. I think I've only seen it once. What did I see it twice? It's because Isabella watched it. Talking about Isabella, her favourite story by far is the Silurian story, because that's the only one she ever talks about.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What
do you think about Doctor Who this week?
That girl has no taste.
Amy fell down to the ground, as she goes on about. And occasionally she makes slight references to pink Daleks and stuff like that.
She just wants to get sucked in a hole, that's all.
A sort of hole. Explain yourself.
No, I'm so sorry. Right, okay.
Anyway.
Anyway,
she's only four, for goodness sake. She's got a mind of a
four-year-old. Oh, Isabella, sorry, I'm thinking of the wrong child. You've got so many offspring, I don't know which one's which.
So, I think it's two. Well, dogs as well.
Two more than I've got, thank God.
Anyway, yes, Pandorica opens.
So we have Vincent going a bit mad.
Precursor.
And that leads us into Church and Bracewell, and that leads
which is
us
a bit build-up stuff.
To River Song, and that leads us to Liz Ten on the Bloody Queen and all that.
Yeah. And hello,
so for people that have stayed with the whole series thus far,
they understand what's going on.
It's payback time, or payoff time, I suppose, not payoff.
Yes. Yeah.
For the diligent ones, and for those that haven't been quite so keyed in and clued up, they're thinking, who's this? What's going on? So again, which comes back to story arcs, and who are they for, I suppose?
Indeed.
Excuse me. I don't know. I mean, from my point of view, I suppose, in a future series, it would be nice to have something happening in episode 1 that has a payoff in episode 13. But if you haven't seen episode 1, it doesn't matter.
Yes, that's the point, isn't it? But as bearing all that in mind, it was very, very good. And long intro before the titles came in.
Yes.
And talking of titles, people were saying that the title sequence itself was getting darker and darker as the series went on. But having watched these episodes, I haven't actually noticed that.
I can't say I noticed.
No, I think it's just people's turning their contrast down on their telly as the series gone. Or maybe the sun outside is getting brighter and just makes the TV screen darker. Maybe. But anyway, I can't understand. That's just something I had to make a reference to.
Okay.
But it was good to see Roy come back. And I must admit, what annoyed me is that some of the podcasts are saying that he'd always been an Auton. because he was an Autron in this, and that it was all, but they misunderstood that completely, and I hadn't. And I thought, what the hell are you going on about? But that scene when the top ten is just there, so we'll talk about something, and then he sort of walks off and comes back again. Have you been?
I'm missing something. Yeah, I'm thinking,
yeah. Oh, it's just, and that's why I think now, why Rory is, Vorby, has sort of cemented himself into the cast, because he's just brilliant. That scene is, it's very romantic, and horse riding and galloping into Stonehenge. And
It's epic, isn't it?
It's great.
Yeah,
there's not much you really can say about it. The only thing annoyed me at the end, when all of a sudden these aliens all gathered together to try and hijack the Doctor. And, yeah, they mentioned the Draconians, which was nice, and a few other sort of unseen...
Chelonians.
Yeah. And it did... The Cyberman scene was just brilliantly done, with the old helmet doing that and the skull falling out. And
yeah, more of that, Mr. Moffat, please. I mean, when they said Stephen Moffat was taking over as producer, I thought, great, it's going to be so dark, and not grim, or dark in an X-Files sense, so you can't see what the hell's going on. But it's just going to be more sort of, I don't know if gothic is the word, but just more sort of gritty and whatever.
Mm.
And I think a lot of these stories haven't been.
No, that's right.
I think visually they'd be a lot darker in terms of lighting and creepier and more atmospheric and all the rest of it. And for the most part, they haven't been. And then suddenly, we've got, dark, creepy vaults and dismembered Cybermen limbs creeping around the house, and things snaking about and people being attacked.
Yeah.
This is what we want.
And that was just that. It was probably the creepiest Cyberman type thingy for a very, very long time.
And it was well done. Were those things CGI or animatronic or something?
CGI, but they saved.
Well, a good bit of CGI for a change.
Saving the budget cut for the series finale. But that whole thing, and somebody unlikely said, "Oh, it's Alicia, amazing." I think pretty sure she said. When the thing up, it wouldn't be a skull falling out, it would be a brain falling out. And that was a very good point. Because it was supposed to be just the brains that was inside the Cyberman's head, in the Cyber Cyberman, which that was one of, apparently, according to the little logo on the front. But I don't care, because it was so well done. Yeah. It says, and there's Amy going, that was great. I know we're sort of jumping to the end, but the bits you remember are these bits towards the end, I did watch Rose last night, funny enough, and the Autons in there, where the hands come down and the guns are rubbish compared to the guns on the Autons, right. Which actually look like they've got little pistol ends to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a massive improvement on the Autons from Rose, apart from the fact a bit more human like and that. I just loved it. It was a big sort of situation where what the hell was going to happen in episode 13, when obviously they'd locked the Doctor in Pandorica, and how he was going to get out, and I couldn't get my head around the actual how they actually got that out, how they did to get him out of the box and stuff. But somebody explained to me that because as long as he goes follows the events afterwards, he can get out. The paradox isn't happening, because he does actually, So I'll go along with that one, because it has to happen. But initially I thought, well, there's no way he's going to get out of the box, because he's got to be out of the box to let himself out of the box. So maybe my brain isn't big enough to cope with those sort of paradoxes. But yes, I'm sure you want to...
What I like about that, the whole thing is set up as there's something inside this box. You open it up and there's nothing inside the box. Something's going into the box. So it's just, again, nice sort of taking your expectations.
Yeah, everybody got it wrong, the only thing a few people got right was the bit where the Doctor goes back to visit Amy in the forest. Everything else, everybody got wrong. Because my speculation would be, when River at the end opens the door up and there's like a stone there. I thought, is she actually inside the Pandorica? And she's with the Doctor. The Doctor's inside the TARDIS. The TARDIS materialised inside there. The Doctor's going to do something to avert the explosion. Wrong. But
so where was she then?
She was in orbit, wasn't she? Just sort of in a time loop exploding.
Yeah, so why was there stone outside the door?
I don't know.
Okay, not aware. Stay there.
Well, I'm sorry, my lord. Your friend on Facebook. Sorry, you can actually ask
him. Well, yes, I can, Stephen.
And come back to me at a later date.
Yeah. And thanks for the drinks. dear. No, I posed this question because I thought this, it's probably been answered on the forums and things, but I don't go on them much these days. And I'm certainly not going to look for the answer about these mirrored shots of Matt Smith.
Mirrored shots?
They just leapt off the screen at me. And it was an interesting.
Yeah, but you're an artiste.
When it was first broadcast, I thought, what's going on here?
You're used to seeing mirrored shots.
Well, I am because I use them for my paintings a lot. Mm. But I thought, it's just so obvious that this picture has been flipped. Why? What's the point?
But they did that, didn't they, with... the one in series one with the they made the mock-up of the Big Ben,
yeah,
and the wing of the aircraft, sorry, the spacecraft went through it and sliced it, and that was actually made as a flip model, wasn't it, for some reason?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think it was made as a flip. I know it was...
Oh, no, they didn't. They did actually flip it on
screen. I know it was flipped.
Yes. Yeah. Go on, but yes.
But, well, no, somebody explained that it was a rush shoot at Stonehenge, and there was some discontinuity between which hand Matt was holding the Sonic in.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I thought, okay, so for the sake of that, they flip the shot and make it really obvious that they flip the shot because his hair looks totally wrong because it's the parting's on the wrong side. Okay. And also his face is not symmetrical any more than yours or mine is. Probably less so. So his face looks a bit weird. And they create more continuity problems because that bit where he lays his head on the side of the thing, he's got his... arm in shot and there's no wristwatch because it's not his
left arm
as the camera's saying it, it's actually a flip shot of his right arm which doesn't have I'm butchering on about things that don't really matter.
It's quite interesting you're saying that because nobody else in anything
but there are four shots in this. He says holding five fingers. There are four shots
and everybody is going to be going back to watch these episodes. Oh yes, in fact now you can actually go back and watch the whole of this series and try and pick out all the mirrored shots they've used.
Well, I don't think there are any other mirror shots, but I think there could be thousands. I have no idea, but those four stuck out as it were for me and drew attention to themselves, and I don't think if they left them as they were I'm sure no one would have noticed.
But again, there's certain elements of this story, apart from the fact that obviously Arthur Darvill playing Rory is one of my favourite characters since the series has begun, and of course River Song is in it. It's not one of my favourite characters since the series began, and Amy Pond is in it, played by Karen Gillan, who's one of my favourite companions of all time. So it's got
what's not to like.
Well, no,
Romans, yes, we like
Romans. Why are the Silurians there at the end? Because they're not an enemy of the Doctor, are they? I got the impression all these people are gathered together to catch the Doctor because they're all enemies of the Doctor. Yet there were some characters there that weren't actually enemies of the Doctor. They were just, I mean, he tried to help the Silurians, and they didn't really, they weren't enemies. I thought at the end of that episode it was quite established that they were going to come back in 500 years time. There was just one character that, you know, that Aelio, what her name was, that was an enemy,
yeah,
but he was friends with the rest of them, so why is there a Silurian there? And things like that, there was a few characters like, oh, was it the Weevils are there? When have the Weevils been enemies of the Doctor? No, and I didn't think the Weevils were particularly intelligent race anyway.
Further, I just sort of dust off a few suits and say, well, right, you wear this, or you fit this, wear it.
And then, and we've got a great episode, move on to the Big Bang, and then suddenly the only thing left of those is a couple of strange statue-y type things and the Daleks. And what's happened to all the others? This massive gathering of the Sontarans. No Sontarans there or anything like that. And then... Now, that was a bit weird there. Obviously, I'm going back again, the brilliant scene of Rory trying to hold himself in as Rory and then shooting Amy, brilliantly played again, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Great ending. They obviously come back to that scene, and that's a lovely little scene. And then the Doctor appears in his fez and stuff. Lovely. All that stuff's really, really good, and I enjoyed that. And where he sort of keeps on jumping backwards and forwards. Of course, then we bring back the little Amelia, which is a lovely... character anyway, so it's lovely to see her back. So they actually start the episode off with some lovely little scenes, which obviously...
I don't know if that opening shot going up through the garden path, past the swing at night, up towards the door and everything, is literally the same shot from episode one, with her praying to Santa again. But again, for long, people have stuck with the series and all the rest of it, again, it's a nice payoff for all that. Because at the end of that little scene... there isn't a demolished shed in the garden with a police box sitting in the middle of it. So something's happened. She has memories of stars and stars don't exist.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? And she draws paintings of stars and stars as well. And of course, initially you think, well, I can't bend, because I don't know, others of members of my family didn't pick up the fact, well, the son's there. Of course, it wasn't the son, it was a TARDIS. Again, it's, everything's sort of more or less much better explained or is covered than RTD would have done. You know, it doesn't cover every single thing he's written, you know, but the important things he does explain, and, you know, because he knows people are going, hang on, what's that, couldn't happen? And it, oh, yeah, it's explained away somehow. And that was explained away quite well, although, you know, I didn't think, I thought the TARDIS was supposed to be indestructible, but. But yeah, that whole thing, and it's a lovely little comedy scenes with the fairs and them throwing the fairs up and shooting it, and the Doctor, and then you go back to the bit the Doctor sees.
I like that because it was the exploding fairs, and then suddenly the Daleks rising up into view, and so we go from this sort of comedy moment to, oh my god,
yeah, they did a lot of that. It's like the comedy moment, the thing, and then suddenly the Doctor appears and falls down and says, "Is he dead? Oh, is he? Oh, yes, yes." And then the river later on covers that bit by saying, oh, well, the Doctor lies. Mm. And this is what I said about the Doctor going, says, makes me feel right when they say, oh, well, the Doctor's 906 years old, but he said he's some other age earlier on, because the Doctor lied about his age.
953.
Mm. What is his age?
Age. And the Rani's.
Oh, right.
Yes, okay.
Sorry. There was the Rani's sister. Anyway, sorry, we're diverting. Yeah, I mean...
Well, he lies there as a diversion. It's like rule one, the Doctor lies. Yes.
Yes. But, yeah, I think that basically leads on to the scenes in which he has to go and sort of sacrifice himself, and like he always has to do it in a series finale. And
the bit I didn't understand, when he suddenly finds himself back in the TARDIS and sees himself and Amy...
Yes.
And she turns around in sort of semi... I think she's actually...
Slightly sees him, but doesn't.
Well, she's got her specs on, and she sort of turns around, and I thought, okay. And then I can't think what the next bit was after that, but it was something that I didn't understand what was going on there.
No. That's a bit of a sort of... just saying, because he's going back, and they've been on holiday somewhere, aren't they? Which, again, at least that implies that they've had other adventures that we haven't seen, which is quite good.
Well, that's true, yes.
Yes.
unravelling, that's right. And then that went into the... the lodger sequence with the crack in the road and the angels with the jacket, the bare arm and all the rest of it. And little Amelia waiting. And that's right, and he's in her bedroom talking to her as she sleeps. And
trying to remind
her. I hate repeats and all that sort of stuff.
And then suddenly
and planting she wakes this, up this seed in her, in her mind.
And then suddenly they wake up, she wakes up on her wedding day, the day which she actually was actually inside the TARDIS. No, she wasn't, because it's a time vortex, so she could well have been there. Oh, I'm getting confused again. And Rory's back as a human being, and I love that bit when I'm not too worried. I didn't find that the parents very convincing as the parents.
I thought the mum was okay. I thought the dad was just bizarre, a tiny little dad. Quote. I said, well, anybody other than this guy would have been better than this guy.
That's because they haven't been in her life, and we haven't really got to know them like we did with Rose's parents. They didn't come in at the same time. But for me, it just didn't work. But because it's only for one scene, I hope they don't bring them back for the next series, because obviously they're now alive. Mm. But that didn't work. But what I enjoyed was the bit, and it's a bit RTD-ish, wasn't it, when the Doctor, she remembered the Doctor and the TARDIS appears.
Yes, very.
But I like the bit where... oh, the Doctor. Rory, oh, it's the Doctor. How do we forget the Doctor? I quite like the way he sort of showed that remembering the Doctor bit. That was quite good for me. Mm. And it's a bit disappointing in a way, but forgivable. And in some ways it was really good, some ways it was bad. But, of course, then they both... Because Rory enters the TARDIS at the end of the episode, that sort of was the finale I wanted him to be in the TARDIS at the end of the series. So that was really good for me. That was what forgave me of the scenes leading up to it, which was very reminiscent of Last of the Time Lords, when they did that big prayer for the Doctor.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But yeah, on the whole,
the power of wishing or something.
I think I'd like to actually sit down and watch those two episodes together as a movie and try and see if I
did. Sort of
you did,
yes.
And I would imagine if. Not they don't sort of gel together as one complete thing. I think they're quite different, aren't they?
No.
I stand corrected. So on the whole, we've covered the thing, and I still maintain
that. And it was the thing that struck me about the wedding was because when he started talking to her, it was sort of set up early on about something borrowed and something.
Yeah, that was a bit
something really new and all that. And yes. I thought, okay, well, where's this going? Because I'm sure I set. I set a quiz question on Doctor Who Online like 2 years ago about.
Oh yes.
About something to do with the TARDIS and a wedding reception and what's the link? Because something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. Yeah. And it took weeks for anyone to get...
Was Stephen Moffat present at this?
I don't think he was. But I'm not saying it's a copyright idea or anything daft. I just thought, this is ringing a bell. And I just thought that was a nice payoff of the...
It was, yes. So how could I forget that? Because that was, for me, the sort of big penny-dropping thing. Oh, yeah. That was genius. That what came to... What I actually spoke audibly said when they said something old, something new, something... I said, genius, out loud. That was just magnificent. Sorry, how could I forget that? Because that is the sort of main payoff for the whole thing. Apart from me, obviously, yes. Rory ended up in the TARDIS at the end of it. But that was just genius. Well, how clever. But you thought of
and
it.
Matt and Tails.
Oh, yes.
I just loved his... Hello, I'm Amy's imaginary friend, but I came anyway.
But that's another thing we forgot to mention, that bit where, at the end of the beginning of the episode, the second episode, final episode, where he sort of goes to, meets River inside the TARDIS and say, hello, darling, I'm home, or something like that. That was quite funny, too. Yeah. But they've got a bit of
rapport. What sort of time do you call this?
I mean, that's quite interesting, because they have got, obviously, a on-screen chemistry and a rapport.
Yes.
And she initially was with the 10th Doctor, David Tennant. Mm. I'm trying to work out whether there was the same sort of rapport, but there certainly there is with Matt and River, which is a bit of a stroke of luck for Stephen Moffat, because obviously there's going to have to be a lot more of her with the 11th Doctor now, which is really good. I'm really looking forward to that as well, because I do enjoy that. But as I say, we covered the whole series now, and my favourite story of the series still is Vincent the Doctor.
Right. I'm not sure I have an overall favourite. I mean, that one sticks in my mind particularly, and... And the final two-parter, I suppose, and The Lodger. Didn't like the Silurians at all, really. Sorry, Mr. Chibnall, but
yeah, it's my least favourite. It was probably Beast Below, but I still enjoyed it.
No, Beast Below is better than you think. Go and watch it again.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just flicking back at the story titles to try and remind me what on earth it was all about. An Amy's Choice was good.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Not Venice one particularly. The Confidential was better than the episode on that one. Yes. That was fascinating. That was
Thank God for the Confidentials.
Yes, indeed. All the Angels, of course.
But the other thing that...
No, for me, the real stinker, actually, was the Dalek one. Mm. Sorry, Mark.
Fair enough. It has been quite widely regarded as one of the worst stories of all.
Which is a
shame. In the history of Doctor Who, let alone of this series. But it is a shame, yeah. But I know Mark will come up with some better work, so... I don't think it's a problem with him. I just think maybe give him something more original. Don't just throw him a classic Doctor Who villain to write an original story and probably be alright, as he has been in the past. And bring back Paul Cornell as well for the next series. I hope he's coming back. I know Russell T Davies is supposed to be coming back for
either. Oh God!
So that'd be quite interesting to see him writing a story under the management of
don't let them go over too much, please.
That'd be quite interesting, so I'm really looking forward to seeing, especially obviously with the Sarah Jane story come up that he's writing, so that'd be good. For Matt Smith, looking forward to seeing that, as I've said in the past. But the thing is, before I finish, because I think we're running out of time, whether this is how it stands in the new Who, whether it stands as the best, or what would you so far say is the best series out of the last five? You can include the specials.
Oh, there's a poser.
If you want to pause, I'm quite happy to do something.
No. I'm a real fan of Matt Smith. I mean, I saw him in something else. As soon as they announced he was the new Doctor, I thought, okay, what else has he been in? And I went online, and there's this show called Party Animals, and he's not the main character, and he absolutely steals it.
Mm.
And as soon as I saw him on screen... with his Peter Davison eyeballs. he's got Peter Davison's eyes, folks, and that's probably where he got cast. I thought, this guy is going to do it, I think. And he hasn't disappointed me at all, apart from those scenes where he's confronting Daleks. So sort that out next year, or the year after, whenever. David Who?
Yeah, we said that right at the beginning. Yeah. In fact, that's probably one of the first words I said in this series of podcasts is David Who. In fact, no, actually, because this podcast was born from my sort of appearances on Bigger on the Inside, and that I think my first bit of feedback for that show was David Who, because I just reviewed 11th Hour on that show.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'd have to say the same. For me, because of him, this makes this series the best of the new,
yeah,
new series. I think he's better than Nicholson as well, I'm afraid.
Well, I never liked him anyway.
Didn't you? No. No, don't like the Norm accent. But I'm currently watching
nothing to do with the accent. Him.
Nah, but yeah. Anyway, I think we'll have to try.
If Eccleston had... I know. How much time have we got?
I don't know.
If Eccleston had played the Ninth Doctor like the character he plays in 28 Days, or 20 Days Later, whatever it's called, it would have been fine.
Mm. How about the way he plays John Lennon in...
I haven't seen that. I've got it on disc.
Really good.
It.
Really good. Yeah. Apart from you have to avert your eyes because you see his willy in it.
Oh, right. Okay.
Well, you might not want to reverse your eyes.
Well,
but you know that it's the woman who plays Thingy in Torchwood. You get to see her naked in it as well. Which is
she really?
I didn't notice one.
Okay, that's right.
No. But it's a brilliant, brilliant. It's probably one of the best Lennon. What do they call them? No, no, one of the best versions of Lennon's life. It's not all of his life. It's just a segment of his life, and it's. So I know a few, like the McGann, one of the McGann brothers did a portrayal of him. I'm not saying his portrayal was better, it's just it was a very good little package of Lennon.
Oh, really?
A good point. I wish I hadn't used that word.
Back to package again.
So I would recommend it to watch. I'm a big Beatles fan anyway, John Lennon fan, but just as a piece of drama, it's great. He's really good in it. Really good. But anyway, thank you, Alistair. And,
that's right.
Come back again, all is forgiven.
I will. And don't forget, kids.
Yes.
Bow ties are cool.
They are, and so are fezzes. As you've seen, if you go on the website, you'll see me in a fez, and Alicia for that matter.
Some bow ties over here.
I don't want a bow tie. I've got a fez, that'll do me.
They're in my sock drawer.
Anyway, I've got to try and see if I can fit on the email and feedback addresses now.
Ah, right, okay. I'll be quiet.
And I've got to try and save it before the battery runs out. And join us again next time, and thank you for listening. Goodbye. The word 20, the word Meg, the word feedback at hotmail.co.uk, or iTunes via the iTunes feed, or you can contact us directly by the Facebook group page or our Facebook friend page. And thank you very much, Alistair, for being such a brilliant co-host. See you next time. Bye-bye. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.